we look at Antifa as more of an ideology or a movement than an organization. To be clear, we do have quite a number of properly predicated domestic terrorism investigations into violent anarchist extremists, any number of whom self-identify with the Antifa movement. And that's part of this broader group of domestic violent extremists that I'm talking about. But it's just one part of it. We also have the racially motivated violent extremists, the militia types, and others.
Yes, and they're all the same. We see those white extremists in the streets fighting, you know, with their flags. I mean, they're the one causing all the trouble, right? According to Chris Wray, during his duration, and we had to endure him as FBI director, this is what we got. No, ISIS, I mean, Antifa is just an idea. It's really, you know, I mean, blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, they did such harm. They killed people. They knocked people out. They did horrible things. They made communities unsafe. They frightened people. They disrespected law enforcement. And now they're in full force on the streets again, in Portland, in Broadview, in Seattle, and other places around the country. You'll notice Washington is now quiet and clean and in order. And Memphis, pretty quiet out of Memphis now that the National Guard have gone in. So it is possible to push this thing back. But in the hotbed of Antifa, which is out on the northwest, Houston, we have a problem. And so today we're going to be talking to a citizen journalist. I've talked to Patrick Riley before. Patrick was out on the street filming, getting to know Antifa a few years ago. He is now working with the Proud Boys, actually. They have a new network called War Boys Network, and his show is called Patty Don't Surf. The thing about Patrick is he is an atheist. We don't agree on a lot of things. He is really on the left in terms of his opinions, but I always enjoy talking with him. And so we're going to catch up today and get his insights on Antifa on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7. But first, there are vast numbers of Americans who have not had a chance for life because their mothers have decided to terminate their lives, either in utero or with the abortion pill, whatever they're doing. And so even if for no other reason, that shouldn't happen in America because we've promised everyone the right to life, and that includes our babies. So on this July, the celebrating the birth of our nation, we remember that, and we want to do everything we can to change it. Preborn is certainly doing that, and that's by showing moms the videos, or videos, the pictures, the photos of their baby in utero, where they can see them sucking their thumb or moving around. It's just beautiful, and that's what happens, and it changes moms' minds. Most of them actually do change their mind when they see that. One ultrasound is $28, and we just hope and pray that you'll be generous and give your best amount to help stop taking the lives of unborn babies in this country. We need to do it right now. So lots of things, good things are happening. Let's add this to the list. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, you can call us. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040 and leave a message, some response, some thing of observation, something you didn't like, something you did like. We love hearing from you. So call 662-821-2040 and don't leave us a message about what you think about what you're hearing. Or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any of the social media platforms. And you can also find us at my website, which is sandyrios.com. I think that it's easier to listen to the podcast doing that. If you're not used to podcasting, sandyrios.com. However, if you're an AFR listener, you probably have already discovered, I hope, that you can go to afr.net, and listen to the program. Or you can go to any social media platform, Apple or Spotify or Amazon or any of those, and listen to Sandy Rios 24/7 anytime. Well, you can listen to it, by the way, 24/7. Wasn't that clever? Anyway, so there are lots of ways to listen, and I encourage you to do that. All right, so stay tuned, because Patrick Riley will join us, the host of Patty Don't Surf on War Boys Network, coming up next on Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Were any of the agitators who assaulted you arrested?
Yeah, well, that is to be found out, because the agitators decide they're going to wear masks and such, so it's very hard to be able to positively identify who is who. So I don't know, but I do know that that entire night in the city of Portland, while I was in the jail, three people came through. Three. So in this entire major U.S. city, there were only three arrests total in the rest of the city that entire night. And it's weirdly coincidental, I guess, that I just happened to be one of them when I'm just on the street with a camera. I mean, there are people with iPhones everywhere recording everything while you're down here. And nobody has been able to produce any evidence that I was an aggressor in this situation.
That's the voice of Nick Sorter. He's one of those journalists that goes out on the street and is capturing lots of video of Antifa and these other protesters. And he's located in Portland right now. And I think one of the most concerning things to me right now is that the local police, the local authorities are refusing to help ICE officers. Some terrible things are happening. In Chicago, something horrible happened on Saturday morning when ICE officers were suddenly surrounded by 10 cars blocked in, and the local Chicago police would not come and help them. And as Nick describes in his arrest last weekend, I think it was Saturday, the police actually, they arrested him because he was beaten by Antifa. They broke his camera. He grabbed an American flag and saved it from burning completely. He was out there doing what he's doing. It's the world turned upside down. Well, you may remember that last year, I think it was, I met a reporter when I went to the J6 Film Fest in Texas named Patrick Riley. Patrick is a former Navy journalist, and also he's been out on the street interviewing when things were really hot. He was out there and caught lots of video and has a lot of knowledge. He now hosts a podcast called Patty Don't Surf, and it's on the War Boys Network, which is formed by Enrico Tarrio, who is the former head of Proud Boys. That's a lot to say in this introduction, but let me just stop for a second and say good morning to Patrick. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Sandy. I'm glad to be here.
It's nice to have you. I want to remind people that you and I have very different views on things, especially on God, and that's not the focus of our conversation, but we're just going to talk, because one of the things I love about you is your honesty. And so whatever comes up, we'll just have an honest discussion about it, okay?
Outstanding.
All right. Okay, so are you talking, on your podcast, are you talking about what's happening in these hot spots right now?
Yeah, we just, in addition to my individual podcast, Patty Don't Surf, on the War Boys Network, we also do a news brief a couple of times a week, usually around noon, whenever, Enrique has the time to broadcast. And we just kind of talk about the issues of the day. Me being the only liberal on the broadcast, I have to defend myself a lot. And we were talking about this just the other day because, you know, Nick's arrest in Portland was absolutely absurd. You know, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on, arresting, a freelance photojournalist for being assaulted is nuts. You know, there's no way to justify that. And I think, you know, my experiences in Portland can inform your viewers, or your listeners, I can say, that the Portland Police Department is utterly and completely incompetent and always has been. I've had nothing but bad experiences in Portland because it's a city that just doesn't know what it is and doesn't know how to enforce the law or selectively enforces it. And, you know, we can go into my specific experiences, but I was not surprised at all to see Nick get arrested for being assaulted. I'd be interested in what the charges would actually be in that case. Like, you know, you illegally ate a boot. You know what I mean? Like, that's not really going to fly, I hope, with any judge. But, you know, it wasn't surprising, but it's also disappointing.
You know, it kind of reminds me, as a random thought, H.G. Wells, you know, is a famous novelist, and I bet you're acquainted with him. And he wrote this, I can't think of it. It might have been The War of the Worlds. I'm not sure. But no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But it was about this subterranean group of people who ruled the people on top of the earth, who were actually the people, who had normal appearance, but they had gotten really childlike. They had no judgment, and they were totally defenseless. And I think it was the warlocks or whatever they were would come up. And this reminds me kind of what's happening. It's like the people, to me, in the Northwest and other areas of the country have become so soft and silly that they really are defenseless.
Yeah.
They've just lost their moorings and have become childlike.
Yeah, I can tell you that Portland, in my opinion, and as somebody who's covered, political rallies all across the country, Portland is an outlier. It is just a bizarre place, and I mean in no good way. My worst experience was in 2019. The Proud Boys had a march in Portland that was completely peaceful. There were no violent incidents whatsoever. But I took a lot of photos, and immediately after the event, I went back to the area where I had rented a bicycle to just ride the city around the city of Portland to my Airbnb and back. And I thought, hey, this will be great. It'll save money on Uber and stuff. Somebody had slashed my tires and actually broke the frame of the bicycle because it was near the beginning of the rally, So it was some, Antifa, miscreant who decided that he wanted to destroy, property, which I had to pay $500 for, which was not fun.
Wow.
And so I go back to the area and I said, all right, well, I'm going to have to call an Uber. But I wanted to look at my photos because that's what I generally want to see, exactly what I just got. So I walked into a bar restaurant that is kind of like a punk rock type of dive bar, which is what I basically grew up in. In Providence, Rhode Island. And so I felt very comfortable going in there. And I was getting, the side eye from everybody in there. Nobody said anything nasty to me, but everybody was very, very cold, and just not friendly. And I thought, am I doing something wrong? Like, I don't know what the deal is. I got into the Uber and I asked the woman, I said, is that bar just kind of an unfriendly place? And she said, well, your shirt isn't helping. I had a Team USA soccer jersey on. I didn't even realize. Like, when she said that to me, I thought, what am I even wearing? I looked down at my shirt, and I was like, why would this bother anybody? And it's just the simple idea of any kind of patriotism, whatever, upsets a lot of these people. And I've never experienced that as many times as I've traveled from, Austin, Texas, to Miami, to San Francisco, to New York, and here in Boston. I've never experienced that sort of attitude. But in Portland, that's just the way it is. It is a strange place, and like I said, in no good way.
Yeah. Well, and we're going to talk about Antifa. I want to because I know you know a lot about it. Isn't that the whole anti-fascist, which is so ironic, such a bad label, has nothing to do. They are the fascists.
They're antisocial is what they are.
Well, that would make sense.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Well, anarchists, too. No, but except they have an order. I mean, they have a pecking order. I mean, the way they, they have rules and things that they do. So they're not really anarchists, but they are in terms of the established order, I guess. I mean, well, you tell me, how would you describe, you watch them, you film them, how would you describe? Yeah. Is there a way, a category, a description?
It's difficult because they're not really organized in the way that a lot of other groups would be. There are very few groups of what we would call Antifa across the country that have any kind of coordinated, acts. They're really just this kind of disparate group of morons in most cases who just show up and do silly things. And I think, you know, one of the best examples I can give is just recently, I was at a Charlie Kirk memorial, you know, vigil on Boston Common. They drew, you know, several hundred people, which was, yeah, I was surprised at in a city like Boston. You know, I've lived here for most of my life. I was surprised that it got that many people to come out for Charlie's memorial. And there was a very small number, maybe 60-something, you know, kids that you could call. And I say kids because they're all in their, like, their early 20s, that you could call Antifa. They were just dressed in black. They wore masks. They're not really particularly organized, and they weren't violent. Again, Portland is a different thing where they are actually violent. Seattle, to a certain extent, is that way, too. But my experience with most of these people is that they're not liberals. They're not, you know, Democrats. They don't vote in elections. Like, if you think that the people who were throwing Molotov cocktails in Portland and Seattle actually voted in the 2020 or 2024 election, you're probably missing the plot. You know, these people are, I think you accurately said, anarchists, you know. And that is not the same as a liberal, definitely not. No more than a conservative is a fascist.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
I think we need to make those distinctions.
Yeah, I do too. You know, I saw one video of, as I recall, I've seen so many videos, it's all in my head meshing together, but I think this was related to Nick Sorter. Oh, no, it was related to the girl from Katie Davenport from Postmillennial. You know, that she was... Remind me, because she was struck in the face by one of the, I'm not sure I could say Antifa, but one of the protesters at one of these rallies, right? That was the one that was, she was caught on, it's on camera. She follows her attackers, and she finally gets the police to kind of, two policemen to kind of follow along with her behind her attackers. Yeah. And as the police get closer to, it's these two small people, really, dressed in black, this police starts to say something or put his hands on this, what turns out to be a woman, and she yells out, "Don't touch me! I'm underage! Don't touch me!" I thought that was so strange. We're talking about young people here, right?
Yeah, I can tell you that the police often make almost always make the wrong decision in these cases, just like they did with Nick. This is back in 2022, I was in New York, and there was for a J6 rally, you know, to free the J6ers, and I was there to take photos, and I had been in the area where the pro Trump and pro J6ers were protesting, and then I left that area and I came back, and a whole bunch of people, including Daryl Lamont Jenkins, who's one of the chief organizers for Antifa on the East Coast for decades, was there, and they blocked my way back, and somebody spit on me, and another guy threw a bottle of water at me, and, you know, technically those are both assaults. I wasn't obviously injured in any way, but seriously, getting spit on is not fun. And the police saw this, and instead of doing something about it, they escorted me around the group of Antifa protesters and brought me, this is in Foley Park in Manhattan in New York, brought me around the way to avoid me, like, getting further assaulted, I guess. But again, I said to the police officer, I said, "Well, why do I have to go around them? You just saw them spit on me." And he had no answer for it. He's like, "Look, we just don't want trouble and all this." You know, I said, "Well, if it's trouble for you to do your job, maybe you should find another." You know, and that to me looked like what happened to Nick, and to a higher, you know, worse extent, because he actually got arrested. But it like I said, it didn't surprise me.
Well, and also when you add to that Katie Davenport, her situation, she's trying to get help from the police. She calls them and she tells them, "It's the person that struck me is in front of me. I'm following them." Talk about courage. That girl's got guts.
Yeah.
And the policeman that I described, they just wandered off and let these kids go. And as I understand it, Patrick, they were headed for, they know that there's like a safe house or something of that sort for Antifa right there.
Yeah.
In this is provision. There's got to be some organizing going on here. I don't.
Well, I mean, Like I said, it's not quite what I think a lot of people think it is, in that they think that there's some sort of, like, George Soros is sending emails to these people, or you know, it's not like that, but it is still incredibly bad behavior, and it's toxic behavior, and it doesn't help anybody. And there is an actual danger of people being hurt. And I think what many people don't know is that when you're a photojournalist, or when you have a camera and you're trying to capture moments like this, you're defenseless. Like you're not just somebody who's, you know, staring down Antifa. You have a camera and you're looking through this lens, and anybody on any side of you could just smack you in the mouth, and that and you wouldn't see it coming. And so when somebody is holding a camera like that and is defenseless, it is really, really like the height of cowardice to assault somebody who's doing that, you know, because they're not going to see it coming. You know, if somebody decides, I've been in outright riots, you know, and I'm telling you, like, I'm lucky to have not been hurt, but it could happen anytime, you know. So if you're looking through the lens of your camera and somebody decides, hey, I'm going to hurt this guy, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And, you know, so I'm glad Nick wasn't hurt. I'm irritated and outraged that he was arrested. But, you know, that's kind of the way things go at this point.
Well, we also should say there has been real violence. You know, Andy Ngo was attacked by Antifa a number of years ago. Andy is the undercover. He was undercover as a Vietnamese-American. Great guy. I've interviewed Andy. And he's followed it ever since. He's never really let up. I don't know if he's out in the street now. But and it did become very dangerous for him. And I think, you know, remember, Patrick, remember those, we've had so much unrest. But those videos of people walking down the street and someone just knocking them out from behind, just like they're dead in the street. And then we had a person shot and killed. I believe that was in Seattle during the Antifa riot. So it's not just speculation. It's not mild. They really, and most recently this weekend, did you see the video of that very large guy in a white shirt? I saw him near Nick several times. I have no idea who he is. And he got into it in a real fist fight with a guy in yellow shorts. They duked it out. The guy in the white shirt got the best of the other guy, which is the Antifa supporter. So it is violent.
Yeah.
And they're spitting. The way they're treating the police is just very hard to watch.
Yeah, I mean, look, like I said, I think the police have earned some, they've been pretty disreputable in a lot of these situations, but I don't condone assaulting a police officer under any circumstances unless it's self-defense. You know, I don't love the idea of giving the police an out on a lot of this stuff, because I think they've been wrong, not just in Portland, but across the country, like I mentioned in my experience in New York. But, the thing that really disturbs me is that, you know, having been, you know, mildly obsessed with politics my whole life, I remember, you know, the Tea Party, rallies and all that stuff. And I never did I think, like, there was going to be, in Occupy Wall Street and all that stuff. There was never going to be, like, people weren't going to duke it out in the streets, you know. But that's what's happening now. It's everything from, you know, 15 years ago is on steroids now. And things that we didn't think that could possibly happen are happening on a daily basis. And I think we need to wake up and realize that we're not dealing with the old left-right paradigm anymore. We're dealing with viciousness and anger that we probably never thought we'd see in our lifetime.
Yeah, very dangerous. And in larger, you know, I was in the 60s and 70s, I was old enough to remember all those riots, and they were dangerous enough, and cities were burning. It was a scary time, and there were people killed, Kent State, but it wasn't at the numbers that we're seeing. I don't know what the numbers are, but it just seems it's more prevalent, and also we have less law enforcement. Now, I'm wondering, with your time on the street, Patrick, I mean, I maybe you don't even agree with me on ICE. I'm glad ICE is out there, and I think we have to deport illegal immigrants. That's my position. That doesn't surprise you, I'm sure. But from observing what's going on, has it altered your view? You're a Navy guy, and you're certainly not an anarchist. Has it altered your view of what needs to be done and just what needs to happen to fix this?
Well, I think, first of all, I think the ideal number of illegal immigrants in the country is zero, right? We should not have, a problem with illegal immigration. Any sovereign nation has the right to enforce their borders. What the reality is that we have depended on illegal labor as part of as one of the linchpins of our economy for about, 60 years now. We basically decided that, hey, look, we're going to staff every single farm in this country mostly with illegal immigrants. And we're willing to do that as long as we can pay lower prices for eggs and beef and chicken. That's just the reality. We did that. So if we want to undo that, we're going to have to change laws. We're going to have to give a pathway to citizenship for people who are here illegally. I admit that they broke the law by coming here. But we need them to run our farms and to, do our landscaping and all the stuff and bus tables and cook food. That's just the reality. If we can't live in a fantasy land where just native-born Americans are going to do all those jobs, they frankly will not. And if you think they will, then I don't know what to do for you, because that's just the most naive thing I could possibly think of. But at the same time, we've got to enforce the law. So the Trump administration, before he took office the second time, said, hey, we're going to concentrate on the illegal, the migrant gangs and MS-13 and people who are trafficking and selling drugs. I'm with that 100%. Great. The fact of the matter is, those people are hard to catch because they're career criminals. They don't want to be caught. It's hard to actually catch them. But they wanted to show numbers. They wanted to say we're deporting more people. So now they're going after the people who are showing up to get work at Home Depot. And that is just completely counterproductive and silly, and it doesn't address the problem. So I've got a real problem with the way ICE is doing things right now, because I think they're not addressing the problem. They're just trying to juice statistics to make the Trump administration look like it's tough on immigration, when in reality, we're deporting the wrong people.
Huh, interesting perspective. I'm sure that part of that's true. I would agree with you completely that we're in this mess for a reason. And I've been on the warpath against Republicans on bringing in illegal immigrants for labor for a long time, Chamber of Commerce, all of that. I really do reject that,
sure.
Patrick. If our kids, those kids that are screaming on the streets, didn't have a means of any kind of help, support, COVID money, whatever, fill in the blanks, whatever they're getting, they would work. They would work. And I think this is something that I would like to see. It would be a rough transition, but ideally that's where I'd like for us to get. I wouldn't mind a guest worker program. But anyway, we're not going to solve it in this conversation. But it is very disturbing.
Sure? I think we could, maybe.
You think we could? Okay. All right. Let's keep going. All right. I want to run a story by you. This is really a random story, and you may not have heard this. You probably haven't yet, because I saw it this morning. This is random. It's a long shot, and yet I wonder. This happened in Everett, Washington, I believe yesterday or maybe Saturday. And just listen. Here's the clip.
A U.S. Postal Service truck and an Amazon delivery van, both surrounded in crime scene tape, as investigators sort out what led up to a shooting inside the mailroom of this Everett apartment complex.
The Amazon worker might be the shooter. It's just like, man. That doing your job.
Jelani Jones lives down the street and says he knows the mail carrier who was shot.
It's just heartbreaking. Like, dang, like, it can't believe that. Like, he's always good with people in our neighborhood.
And a small altercation took place where the carrier was unfortunately shot in the face.
Postal inspectors say the mail carrier was working his route when he was shot.
This is devastating to, the postal community.
Everett police quickly arrested the suspected shooter, who they say was another delivery driver.
Amazon walked in and I guess there was a scuffle, and he pulled out a gun and shot him in the face. Walked into the office, said, I shot your postal worker, I'll be standing by my truck.
While investigators sort out exactly what may have led a delivery driver to shoot a postal worker while both were on the job, neighbors say they're hoping for answers soon.
These guys, they go through a lot to do their job, and it's really shocking.
Yeah, so here's the story. I know it was pretty clear, but an Amazon driver shoots a USPS delivery guy. Their trucks are back-to-back in the eye. He shoots him in the eye, Patrick. He's in critical condition. And the thing that went through my mind was, well, this is Washington. And the thing that went through my mind, are we, you know, this is a perfect job. Isn't Amazon a perfect job for Antifa? What kind of a person does that and so coldly stands there and just is not moved, according to other reports I read? I know you can't make the assessment, but I did wonder. I did wonder.
Well, I hope, first of all, I hope that the postal worker survives. Not to make light of it, but it's kind of odd that someone went postal on a postal worker.
Yes, I thought of that,
too. That's the first time I've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, obviously, I have no idea what the reason for this was. Maybe they had a personal beef or whatever, but look, that's I think Amazon should make sure that their workers are not packing when they're delivering packages. I think that's probably what ought to happen here.
Well, the thing that
it's a bizarre story. I don't know that I have an opinion on it.
I know. But you know what? The thing that struck me though is the coldness, just the coldness, and that's how I see Antifa. I see a disregard for life and the rule of law. And so it was a whiff of something that might not mean anything, but it is the right part of the country. Yeah. I've been through Everett many, many times on my way up to Vancouver. And I would imagine there are people there that are Antifa. It's probably likely. All right. So let me make something clear, Patrick. You are working with Enrico Terrio, and you covered the Proud Boys. That was one of your beats when you were on the street doing journalism. You were not part of the Proud Boys, but you were covering them, and you actually ended up testifying at their trial. So let me ask you a question about them, because they were the ones that were out on the street countering Antifa. Do you think they have just been shut down? Are they just unable or unwilling or uninterested in doing anything like that now?
All I can tell you on that, without betraying any kind of confidence, is that you wouldn't ask that question in a week or two.
Okay.
There is going to be a response, and especially specifically in the Pacific Northwest. And I don't want to get into details, but I have had discussions with guys who know, and there is going to be a response to it. Maybe, you might say it's a little late or whatever, but there is a response coming from them. But I don't want to characterize it until it actually happens. And I don't mean anything sinister. I'm talking about peaceful, protests and things of that nature. The Proud Boys have done a lot of protests in Portland over the years, some of which became violent, some of which didn't. There is going to be a response. I don't speak for anybody else except for myself.
Right.
And I can just say that there will be a response.
Okay. I imagine it's probably killing them, because their big thing is, and I don't say this with criticism, they're macho American guys who wanted to fight back, and are not perfect guys, as you pointed out very clearly. They're not exactly church guys, but they believe in American male strength, and so it'll be interesting to see what they do. And it is dangerous for them after J6. Many of them have been in jail, so this is whatever happens. We'll be watching.
Just one of the things that I think your listeners might want to know, and maybe don't know, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, is that a lot of these guys have not been pardoned. Most of the Proud Boys who were accused or convicted, wrongly in my opinion, convicted of seditious conspiracy and got, up to, 15 to 22 years, I think, between all of them, they got their sentences commuted. They're still convicted felons because of it, right? It's not a pardon. A lot of people, most people believe that they all got pardoned. Well, it's a distinction with a very important difference. Right. If they still, every job application that Joe Biggs fills out or Ethan Ordean fills out or Zachary Real fills out or Dominic Pizzola fills out is going to have to contain the information that they are convicted felons. Mm-hmm. Whereas, other people were pardoned. That basically makes them unemployable for the rest of their lives. Unfortunately, in this country, we look at felons and say that, they can't be redeemed. I thought we believed in rehabilitation in America, but in practice, we really don't, They'll have that stigma around them for the rest of their lives. In Joe's specific case, Joe Biggs, who's an Army veteran, who's medically retired by the Army after having earned a Purple Heart deployed in Afghanistan, he no longer has access to his VA benefits.
Oh boy.
Because he's a convicted felon. That is insane, and it's wrong. And whatever you think of him politically, Joe and I don't agree on the day of the week or the color of grass. But I'm telling you that it's just absolutely wrong to deny somebody who was medically retired by the military because of wounds he sustained in war, right, is no longer allowed to access his VA benefits because of, you know, a nonviolent offense in the Capitol. All the president has to do is just, you know, change that from a commutation to a pardon to fix this problem. But he hasn't and doesn't seem like he wants to. And I think that maybe he would if there was a groundswell of people. So if this bothers you, there's ways that you can contribute to making this happen. If you go to, you know, the War Boys on X, and just look at the information there, or follow
okay.
Joe,
okay.
You'll maybe be able to help him out, because this is egregious. You don't have to agree with him politically. I sure don't, but this is wrong, and it needs to be addressed.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up, Patrick, because excuse me, I'm a fierce defender of the J6ers, probably more than you are, probably in every way. But you don't like injustice, and neither do I. And I have I haven't done enough, but I've tried to do many things, including make contacts in Washington. But I have neglected these guys. You know, I that was a story that escaped me, what actually happened to them. And so I'm glad you brought this to our attention. Joe Biggs is one of them. And there are tragic stories, and it's not fixed yet. And I agree with you. This needs to be addressed. Maybe we can talk offline about other connections for people in Washington who might want to look at this. So I'm going to ask you one more thing, Pat, or one more topic. By the way, I was just in Boston. I told you that off the air, and we had a marvelous time. What a great city. So I wanted to go back to Boston Commons, because Patrick, in 2003, when Massachusetts was imminently going to legalize gay marriage, I went there and spoke at Boston Commons with the Cardinal on the stage. There were thousands of people there. It was spoke at Faneuil Hall, and I have bittersweet memories, obviously, for the thing that happened there. But I really gave everything in that fight and lost. But I went back to Boston Common, and we walked through, and it was a marijuana festival. I mean, all over, just tense. It was kind of upsetting, to be honest with you. It's such a historic place, and it just seemed like such a silly thing to be happening in that place, given all that's going on. But you said there's this Charlie Kirk rally there. Was that shortly after his assassination?
Yeah, it was right after his assassination. And, I was there. I was interested to see how many people would show up. And I was, I was actually shocked that there were that many people there. And I thought that counter protesters would outnumber the vigil crowd. That wasn't the case at all. It was easily, like 5-1, as far as that goes, in favor of the Kirk supporters. And it was interesting. I thought, as you know, even being an atheist, I was raised, Catholic, and my father was the religion teacher at the Catholic high school that I went to. And I've always been, very into, biblical, discussions, and I've read my Bible, front to back. And I think I'm pretty biblically literate, especially compared to a lot of people that show up at MAGA rallies. There were some readings, there was some bizarre theology espoused at this thing, but on the whole, I thought that people really just thought, hey, Charlie was a good guy. That's not, I'm not putting my opinion on this. I'm just saying what people there thought. And this is horribly wrong. And his assassination was a tragedy, and is unforgivable and disgusting. Although I will say, and I've said this on my podcast and on the War Boys News Brief, that I was absolutely just floored by Erica, Charlie's wife.
Yes.
Her just unbelievable grace, you know, in that horrible situation, forgiving, you know, the murderer of her husband and father of her two young children was just, I mean, that's what Christianity is supposed to be. I mean, you know, that, and it's sad that that's uncommon, but it really is uncommon. It really is. And it was a moment that I thought, wow, I said, wow, that's just the amount of courage and guts that takes is just something that's beyond my comprehension. You know, I don't know that I could do that in that position.
Well, I think what I would say to you, Patrick, we've talked about faith before, of course, and I love talking to you about it. I would just say that I don't think we have seen very many examples of the living God in our church systems. The power of God is irresistible. Right. It is powerful. It does change lives. And I think what we saw with Charlie at his memorial service, I mean, that was the power of God. And that's why Erica could forgive. That is the power of God. That's the real thing. That's God. That's Jesus. What we see in our churches is, at best, sometimes a small imitation, a slight glance, and sometimes just a complete opposite of it's ritual, it's exercise, it's do this and do that. That is not who God is. And so I'm
dogma and not grace. You know,
exactly.
That's the thing. It's just
exactly.
dogma. You know,
exactly.
And I don't think that does anybody any good at any time.
No, because it can't change lives, and it can't stop anarchists, and it can't stop Islamists. There's nothing but the power of God that can stop that, and that's why many of us are on fire, really, in a renewed way, to be as frank and open and evangelistic as we possibly can, for the sake of people, for the sake of our friends and our family, because this is right. This is right and just, and we need to set the world aright, and the only person that can do that is God himself. Nobody else is qualified. Donald Trump's not qualified. We can't make this right. It's way too messed up, but God can.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you say that Donald Trump is not qualified to do that. And I'm not trying to, you know, bang a political drum here. I'm just saying that the purpose of my podcast on in most episodes, almost all of them, but the kind of thesis behind it is that I think that a lot of evangelicals, and I accept you from this, obviously, but because we've talked and I understand, I've followed you for a long time, way before Trump. So I understand where your faith is and that it's totally legitimate. But what I'm saying is there are a lot of people in the evangelical community in the United States who've replaced, they wouldn't admit to this, but they've replaced Jesus Christ with Donald Trump. And I think there's a lot of idolatry that's going on. And you know, I go over this constantly on the show. I mean, it gets progressively crazier. You know, we heard, you know, Jim Baker and these guys saying, and Lance Wall now, and these characters saying that, you know, he's the reincarnation of King Cyrus. I was raised Christian. I don't believe that we believe in reincarnation, but apparently that's a thing now. But now it went from that to now he's King David. You know, and it was so bizarre to see the progression in a bad way of this sort of you know, faux theology. As somebody, again, I'm not a Christian, I'm an atheist, but it actually offends me. Like, it offends me. The kid that I grew up as, the altar boy, is irritated by this. Like, I think it's blasphemy. You know?
Well, I don't disagree, and I think I would just point out, Patrick, that God has placed truth in your heart. That's why I'm optimistic. You know, God is the God of all truth, and so just don't get so bogged down with people, because they're going to disappoint you every time. But God is ever worthy of your trust and praise. He is not your priest. He is not Lance Wellnow. He's not Donald Trump. He's not me. God is so far above all of us. Is so holy, and his power is real. And so I just always encourage you, don't give up, and just keep looking for the truth. And you're going to land there, and you're going to call me when you do. and I'm going to cry. So anyway.
Well, I promise you that if I do, I will call you, but I wouldn't hang by the phone.
Okay, I won't, but I'm going to keep that eternal pipeline going, phone line for you. But Patrick, it's really a privilege. I really love talking to you. And you take care of yourself. And let me just say again, it's Paddy, don't surf. Paddy, P-A-D-D-Y, that must be the Italian, no, Irish in you. Paddy, don't surf. And you can find it on War Boys Network. And I guess it's on any podcast platform, right?
Yeah, and it's on X. If you want to find me, you can find the War Boys Network on X. Enrique has a show there. Joe Biggs has a show there.
Okay.
Kim Coulter and Ann Coulter's niece has a show there. And so if you're looking to see a very disparate group of people talk about politics, that's the place to go. It's an awesome network. It's just launched recently, so we're just getting off the ground. But I definitely appreciate it if you followed us at War Boys Studios on X.
Okay. All right. That's a great challenge. We'll do that, Patrick. And God bless you, and hope to talk to you again soon, okay?
Thanks so much, Sandy. I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
It's Share-a-thon on American Family Radio. Call now and partner with AFR at 877-616-2396 or give online at AFR.net. It's Share-a-thon on American Family Radio.
Yes, he did. So yes, he can.
Well, this is Sandy Rios taking a bit of a break here. And this week is American Family Association / American Family Radio Share-a-thon. And you just heard the theme, the music theme. And the theme is, yes, he can. Yes, he can. Yes, he can. And that the theme verse is actually one of my favorites. I have used this all the time through my Christian life. It's found in Ephesians 3. You'll know this verse if you are a Bible-believing Christian who likes to memorize verses and grew up with God's word as part of your heart. Now to him who is able to do far more abundantly than all that we ask or even think, according to the power at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. Love it, because he is so much greater than we are. AFA continues to, do great work through the decades. It was started with by my good friend, Tim Wildman's dad, Don Wildman, who began it back in 1977, well, at least after the television was getting a little wild in 1977. And it was during that time that he just stood out. Nobody was doing what he was doing. He took a stand on the bad things that our children were seeing on television. Most of you won't even remember those decades. And it seems innocent now compared to where we've come. But Don stood up. He was a Methodist preacher from Mississippi. And he sounded like one, too. But when you listened to him, you realized how brilliant this man was. Bold, fearless, and brilliant. He is our founder. Now, these donations will go, of course, to all of the ministries of American Family Radio, American Family Association, whether it's the magazine or we have a great entity now. We're helping vet judicial candidates. Phil Jauregui is leading that, and they're doing just great things. They're vetting people in a different way. You know, we've had some problems in the past where vetting has been a little careless and not as thorough as what the guys at our group are doing. And so I commend that to you. I commend the radio stations to you, which come to you every single day with people that you trust and the way that many of you pick up your news and learn. So the money is going, we have a high charity rating. They spend their money well. I'm part of the AFA family. They've supported me for years. And so if you'd like me to continue, if you'd like the podcast continue, the daily shows, the magazine, the ministries, all you have to do is call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or if you like not to talk to somebody, go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and make your most generous contribution.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, Preborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place a machine, an ultrasound machine, in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
So that's a little bit of sound. You know, it's a challenge for Adam to pull those clips because their language is absolutely horrendous. And so we got this girl screaming. Now, she's screaming right in the face of a policeman, right there. I saw a video just this morning of a guy screaming in the face of a policeman and then spitting him. And then, of course, ICE officers really took care of that young gentleman for spitting in the face of the officer. And I was glad to see that. But they say the most horrendous things. You might have heard this. It was on that clip, but this one screamer said, "I hope your children blanking hate you. You go home to your wife and you brag about this blank." You know, the girl that in Chicago, across the country a bit, that was the head of the group that surrounded ICE agents with 10 cars and actually had a weapon, and they ended up having to shoot her. She's on tape, threatening them, talking about blanking them and taking care of them. It's just... this can't go on. It can't go on. So Patrick, you know, certainly did a good job of filling in some of the blanks for us about Antifa. And in a later show that we're going to do very soon, we're going to be talking about who is paying for this. Who is paying for this? We actually know a lot about that. So I encourage you to, enjoy this series we're doing and stay tuned for the next Sandy Rios 24/7, because that's what we'll be talking about. So thanks for listening today to Sandy Rios 24/7. And remember, we're in the midst of the Fall Share-a-thon for American Family Association, American Family Radio. And if you would like to support the ministry, support this show, support the daily hosts, support the magazine, support the great work of American Family Association, call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396, or go to AFR.net, AFR.net, and make your most generous donation. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.